Hello, hi. Hope you can see me. Yes, it's great to be here. Thank you so much. So it's over 20 years since I left behind the closed world that I describe in Cloistered, which is the account of my 12 years as a contemplative Carmelite nun, as Jack said. And it was a dismal grey January day, a very depressing day when I stepped beyond the grill. With its bars, its walls, its keys, its barriers, and strapped into the passenger seat of my sister's car. It was one of those old Citroën d'Urchevaux cars, embraced an uncertain future. It was a future far away from the securities and the restrictions that I'd known as a nun. Being inside, which was a cloistered life, which meant we were secluded, or as we called it, enclosed, meant a life of dedication and protection. It meant a firm sense of purpose, but it also meant being exposed to intense levels of experience that required certain staying power and a certain resilience. So human nature didn't stop being human nature just because you were in the cloister and wearing a floor-length habit and a sort of acres of veil and sandals. And the four walls that were there not to keep us in, but to keep the world out, which was the famous explanation of it, we were set apart from the world, offered no protection from one's inner demons and the shadow side of those 20 or so very different personalities, people all thrown together under a rather impressive Gothic roof. The proverbial bats were very much in the belfry, and I eventually re realized I had no intention of leaving. So perhaps that's why I did. But I spent over a decade in this closed world that I describe, and while I've been out for 20 plus years, the book describing my time inside has only been out for a fortnight. It's been a very intense 2 weeks during which I've been asked all sorts of questions by all sorts of people. And have been exposed to a wide range of reactions to what is perceived as a very extreme and, let's face it, very anachronistic way of life. So people want to know not only why did I go in, why did I stay so long, why did I leave? Often people want to know weird bits of nitty-gritty, like what did you eat for, lunch and things like that. But anyway, the other thing people want to know is what's my life like now? So the fact that one of the main reasons I wrote the book was actually to stop people asking these really awkward questions, because I hated being asked things like this earlier on. And I just wanted to be able to say to people, read the book. But anyway, that's beside the point. I still get asked these questions. So what I do is I usually start talking about God and the life of prayer, the challenges of community. But it's when I mentioned the word enclosure, which shares a common root with seclusion and cloister, by the way, to close in Latin's claudere. I see the frowns appear on people's faces. It's only when I start talking about the cell that the furrowed brows morph into expressions of alarm. I've seen these reactions so many times, and of course, they stem from a concern for individual freedom, not to mention concern about the darker associations of the word cell. But the word cell is one we often use in modern life, whether in the context of cell phones or stem cells or other cellular realities. And the concept of a discrete and sealed-off unit is obviously a very basic one. In monastic terms, a cell is simply the typically denuded, bare bedroom of a vowed religious sister or brother. Usually it's stripped completely of sort of extraneous or decoration and distraction in order to support the interior life of the prayerful life. So the cell was a very uncluttered space and a very beautiful focused space. It had a certain reassuring echo. I personally loved my little wooden cell, partly because no one else was allowed to enter it, which was certainly an advantage. Had a feeling of privacy. And it was free of drama, it was free of interference. It had an atmosphere of dedication, meaning you knew that something special was supposed to and was even quite likely to happen there. This all happened within the context of a life of deep contemplative prayer. I'm not talking about prayer today, I'm talking about the cell and the enclosure and living in a very separated space, which I've realised people find quite strange. But I think we need maybe not fewer cells, but more cells in this world, because every introvert, every would-be hermit needs a room of their own, however small. I think Virginia Woolf would have agreed. And on a primal level, the cell is like a sort of nest in a way, or a rabbit hole. It's potentially a sort of home. More broadly, the enclosure of a monastery can be at its best like a Garden of Eden. You can even fall in love with that kind of place. It reassures you, it holds you, just as a friend or lover holds you with their gaze. And its holding supports you as the person you really are, your interior freedom, your creativity. Every time you put pen to paper, we see the thread of a thought emerging and some sort of creativity, is unleashed. An uncluttered space and privacy are really what we need in order to engage with and give the emerging thought our full attention. And the same goes for so many forms of work and so many human processes, sifting, mulling, thinking over deep ideas. If this makes sense on a purely human level, perhaps the concept of a separated space or an enclosure or even a monastic cloister might begin to look a little bit less weird and negative or life-denying. It might even begin to look like a good idea up to a point. Like all good ideas, it needs to be implemented wisely and proportionately, and in such a way that the individual is not crushed or negated by solitude, but is set free by it. For most people, the cell needs to be balanced with a healthy life in community. The early Carmelites knew this and aimed for a life that was not only eremitical, which means hermit-based, but communal. They styled themselves hermits in community, which, although sounds like a contradiction in terms, is really just a sort of call for a very subtle balancing act between the outer and the inner lives. It was not an impossible ideal, and I still find myself seeking quiet spaces, places where I can be true to myself, my thoughts within a busy world. Not long ago, many of us were forced into situations of solitude or isolation, sometimes dreadful ones. But there were also the fact that, there were also many people who were surprised at how the experience enabled a new relationship with themselves and with their creativity. And I think, books were written, things were invented, music albums were composed. It's been barely a year since the official end of the pandemic, but it was during those 3 years of strangely renewed seclusion that I was able to re-enter the closed world of my past experiences, to revisit the ancient cloister that still occupies my mind, to allow its echoes and its reverberations to pass through me like ghosts, some friendly, some messengers, some portents of another dimension altogether. And to write about it in a way that I hope reaches others and enriches, or at least makes some sort of sense to those who read about my time inside. Carmelite life was much more than an unforgettable experience. It formed me and it changed me and somehow reprogrammed me at a deep level. There was much there that was beautiful. Part of the programming was profoundly positive. Other parts of it have had to be let go or uprooted. And this is the really difficult and long drawn out part of it, the challenge to sift and discern and to become the person I meant to be without the support of a physical enclosure or a community structure and routine. It's the call to be a mentally and spiritually whole and healthy person. Prayer is only part of it, as are other old-fashioned sounding things like faith and hope. The experience of writing Cloistered has been a cleansing and a refreshing one, and has reinforced my lifelong impression that seclusion is a powerful precondition of certain types of spiritual processing and of deep creativity. Artists and writers have long sought it out, as have natural contemplatives, not only monks and nuns, but people in general who feel drawn to silence and the inner life, and who mull and cannot help mulling, and who seek to plumb the depths of even the most intangible experiences using the tool of thought, contemplation, or awareness. Sometimes it can seem graced by a certain elan, something some of us call inspiration. Being a nun is an elite form of life in one sense, but you don't need to be a special kind of person to seek out seclusion in lesser or greater ways. Anyone with a certain modicum of liberty in their lives can probably find ways of being substantially alone from time to time. When the pandemic hit, I was living a busy life in Oxford. I'd just given up teaching teenagers philosophy and ethics and caring for my mum during her final illness. I was living in a relatively cramped Victorian house with my partner. The cloistered space at the top of the house, with its desk and its views, often drew me. It did me good. But when I needed a stretch of absolute quiet and guaranteed thinking time, it was the bathroom that became my cell. I didn't go for scented candles or soft music, although the odd Bruckner symphony made it through, thanks to a robust boombox. But it allowed my mind to relax, and I relaxed and unspooled in warmth and steam and solitude. These days, my cell is something I carry around with me. It's an internal reality. It's a state of mind. It's an ability to sit quietly and observe, to be present to the ticking of a clock, the wind in the trees, or the slant of the rain on the bike shed on a chilly day. The four walls of my beautiful monastic cell are long gone, like so much else that made up that rather mysterious and beautiful, but also very difficult way of life. But having spent so long in that very deep experience and having cultivated interiority in a world apart, I realized that my cell, and possibly your cell, is wherever I happen to be, wherever you happen to be. It can be in your mind, it can be in the air in which you're sitting, the silent embrace of the wordless spirit, if you believe in such things as I do. And that seems to follow me around. So I feel that the cell is where I and all of us potentially can go to sit and be and mull and to somehow engage with truth. It can be the locus of your integrity, of your creativity. So what I want to end with is just that when your life seems too cluttered or too busy or full of ugly things, of lists and obligations, remember there is a place apart that is waiting for you. There's a place that has your and only your name written on it. Remember it, seek it out, and mull on. So I hope this has been a helpful reflection on the process of writing Cloistered and what I feel is a takeaway, which is that all of us can find something like a monastic cell in our lives that will enrich us. Thank you for letting me share this with you.